And now we are joined today for our first live interview, and we're very happy to be joined by Omar Hassan. Omar is a member of Socialist Alternative, a Palestine solidarity activist, and has also been a long-time supporter of the Syrian uprising and the Syrian revolution. He also recently, one of the reasons we have him on our program today is that he recently visited Syria for a number of weeks following the fall of the Bashar al-Assad dictatorship that took place on December 8 last year. Since then, obviously the Hatah Tayyar al-Sham, HTS, have assumed power. And Omar Hassan, in his visit to Syria, actually produced a number of articles on his experiences and what he kind of witnessed there, especially examining the changes in politics in Syria following the fall of the al-Assad dictatorship, and they have been published in Red Flag. Good morning, Omar.
Good morning, Jacob. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so let's start off with the first question, drawing, I guess, on your experiences visiting Syria. What were your kind of impressions, I guess, on how has the fall of Assad impacted on politics in Syria, especially from the discussions that you had with ordinary people, especially because of the potential opening up of democratic rights as well?
Yeah, so things are happening on two tracks. The first and the most visible is sort of what's happening in the elite of society and the governmental institutions and discussions, and we can talk about that. But in terms of your question on the ground, what's happening, there's a massive opening up of political discussion and life in Syria. And this is something that you cannot know about from a distance unless you happen to know people in Syria who are active on the ground or are following Syrian social media sites, which are very rich in discussion. Because too often people only view what's happening in a society based on what policies are being implemented from above and so on. But there's actually a lot going on the ground. The fall of Bashar al-Assad, a 54-year-long dictatorship of Bashar and his father, is an extremely important event. 500,000 people were killed, at least, in the civil war. 100,000 of them tortured to death. He turned a middle-income country into one comparable with Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries on earth. And so the fall of this monster has been welcomed by the vast majority of Syrians. The phrase they used with me most often was that it allows them to breathe after 54 years of silence and anxiety and terror. It allows them to speak their minds about politics, to organize, to strike and protest. Everywhere I walked in Damascus in particular, political discussion was raging on every corner. Everyone on their breaks, in every marketplace, people are talking politics. The price of food, in some cases, has gone down. The lack of checkpoints, every taxi driver or bus driver comments constantly on the terror of stopping at a checkpoint. All that's gone. There is so much organizing going on. One of my favorite stories is the Ba'ath Party headquarters in Jadamana, which is a Syrian suburb of Damascus, has been taken over by a social group, by like an activist group, and turned into a social forum, and it's been rebranded as such. There are meetings there every night of the week. So there's a lot that's uncertain about Syria's future, but it's a very tangible change. The fact that people are now allowed to organize in the open, we take it for granted in a country like Australia that you can go to the streets and organize a protest or even simply put up a poster or a social media post advertising a discussion about a topic, and that you can do that. None of that was possible in Syria. People were arrested and tortured and executed for simply speaking in their own home against the government. So this is an enormous opportunity which people are taking full opportunity of.
Yeah, thank you, Omar. This is Jordan Shukri here. Thank you for actually providing that description. We all welcome the fall of Assad and the opening of opportunities, albeit in still constrained circumstances for organising in Al Shams. Just wondering if you can describe now the politics of the HTS and the character and composition of this Syrian transitional government. We've heard recently, for instance, that they plan to implement a free market model. So what type of government are they seeking to run and, you know, for the benefit of whom?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So HTS, Tahrir al-Sham, emerged as part of the defeat and sort of destruction of the initial phase of the Syrian revolution, which became a civil war. Basically, the Syrian government responded to the democratic protest through brutal militarization, and that then forced the revolution to arm itself, to defend itself against the government, and then its later its Iranian and Russian proxies, or not proxies, supporters. HTS was the product of a year-long process where the progressive and leftist aspects of the revolution and the militias were sidelined by more conservative or very conservative Islamist forces. And HTS actually emerged from the Al-Qaeda franchise in Syria. It broke from that 8 years ago, I think, in 2016. But it remained a very conservative, pro-capitalist political force. So it basically became hegemonic due to substantial funding it received from a bit from Turkey, but more from the Gulf states. And so it was able to capture and co-opt and murder any resistance, which was more independent. So that's the situation that characterized Syria as of November last year. Of course, the Kurdish and the largely Druze areas are different, but we can talk about that in a second. But they controlled most of the resistance forces in the north of the country, in Idlib, where they'd run a government essentially there for some time, and they had influence elsewhere. Now, since Assad's fall, HTS have become the sole national force operating in Syria because of their superior organization, militias, and funding. Their politics are, firstly, they're pro-capitalist. They absolutely support the free market, the ability of the rich to exploit and oppress their workers. They support free trade policies. The Idlib area, which was independent from the Syrian government basically the whole time, was run in a very free market manner, lots of Turkish investment and so on. And so they seek to expand this policy across all of Syria. Now, this is a real problem because Syria, as I said before, is an extremely poor country now. And in fact, one of the only measures in Syrian society that remained from the early years of the Ba'ath Party's rule, which was always reactionary, but for a time involved some sort of developmentalism, were subsidies, state subsidies on essential goods like bread, petrol, diesel for heating the home and other things. HTS have abolished these subsidies, which is going to massively increase the cost for ordinary people to deal with these things. So that's one issue. The other question is in relation to is international politics. And I know many people on the left view the world almost exclusively in the lens of geopolitics and international alignments. The Syrian government under Assad was an extremely pragmatic force. It worked with the U.S. during the war on terror. It was one of the major sites of rendition, i.e., you know, American suspects were sent to Syria for torture and disappearance. But more recently, it's been associated with the Iranian axis, so-called axis of resistance. HTS are very clearly signaling they want to adopt a much more pragmatic, even more pragmatic attitude to international relations. They're working closely with Turkey and Qatar. They want, rightly, they want the Americans to lift the sanctions. Sanctions never hurt governments and the rich, they only ever hurt working class people. So they're right about that. But the problem is that as a conservative capitalist force, the way they do that, the way they campaign for such things is to be totally unprincipled and pragmatic. So HTS welcomed Donald Trump's ascension to power in pretty disgraceful language. They basically are wielding and dealing with the international powers in a totally pragmatic way. And so what we're seeing is a very orthodox sort of pro-capitalist series of policies from HTS. And additionally, internally, their Islamism, their political Islamism, is an issue, not because of religion in the abstract, but because they have a very conservative interpretation and are using their vision of political Islam to attempt to, for example, try and control the school curriculum, to remove references to evolution, to teach young Syrians that Christians, Alawis, Druze, Jews, etc., are fallen people who've lost their way from Islam, and other such things. In areas of Idlib where they controlled, they did try and make wearing the hijab mandatory. They have not done that at a national level yet because they simply don't have the capacity to control the whole country. One thing that I should say, HTS only had about 30,000 fighters in its own right, and so it really does not have the capacity to control the whole country, and so it is not implementing its full program, which is very much a good thing, but to the extent that it can consolidate, and actually just yesterday Ahmed al-Sharaa announced himself as the president of Syria. They've indefinitely delayed a national conference to start the process of putting together a constitution. So there's things happening, all of which point to the consolidation of HTS, its integration into the international system of diplomacy and imperialism, and its integration into the international system of free trade and so on. So there's a lot of things that Syrian activists and leftists are organizing to resist. But we have to keep going back, they are capable of resisting and organizing precisely because the old regime has fallen and there is space to do so.
Well, that brings us into, I think, the next good question we wanted to kind of obviously ask is, because in one of the Red Flag articles, you actually wrote about a meeting that you attended of left-wing kind of activists. And I guess I want to kind of hear your comments on the state and composition of grassroots left-wing alternative forces within Syria. And actually, this is just an extra point. I'm not sure if you would be in a position to answer this or if you had any interactions with them while you were there. But obviously, one thing about Syria's history was a lot of the so-called traditional communist parties in Syria were actually supporters of Assad, and one of them, I think, from my memory, even held a position within the government of Assad's government. And of course, they made a bit of a change in tact when the fall of Assad happened. And I guess, I wanted to kind of also hear about what is sort of the position of those forces within Syria as well, if you had any knowledge of that.
So the official Communist Party, which fragmented many times over the years, but the official Communist Party's position was to be part of the government and supportive of the Baath regime as a progressive nationalist, as part of the Progressive Nationalist Front, which had been basically in power and used as a fig leaf by the regime for 50 years. They are a shambles and really only by the end, they were really only a name. There were other left groups with a similar background politically, sort of Stalinoid or Stalinist of various stripes, who were also tolerated by the old regime, but who were slightly more oppositional, who played the game a bit cynically, you would say. There's a group called the People's Will, which has substantial connections in the trade union movement, because it was essentially allowed to be the sort of representative of sections of organized labor, but by the old regime. So they're very compromised politically. On the other hand, they have some real roots. I didn't spend a lot of time with them, but I did see them at one event and talk to them briefly. The left that I'm most familiar with, there's a few different kind of categories and groups. So the group that's the most similar to sort of socialist alternative, and if people know the revolutionary socialists in Egypt, clearly revolutionary organization. It was the revolutionary left current. They're a very young group. They formed not long ago, in the aftermath of the sort of 2000s opening up and the 2011 revolution. They played a very, very small role in some places. But since then, they've been active, they've been growing from a very small base, and they're very useful, very active, extremely brave, very courageous, but very small still. And they're doing their best to throw themselves into all the organizing that's taking place everywhere at the moment. There's another group that people might be interested in called the Workers' Communist Party, which has a longer history and as well fragmented over the years. I met one of its founders, Munif Milhem, who describes himself as the sort of father of Syrian Trotskyism. He co-founded the group in the late 70s, 76, I think. A lot of these people are extremely impressive. They spent decades in regime prisons and are now doing their best to organize defense of democratic rights, solidarity with women's rights, all this kind of stuff, like really, really wonderful organizing. But they're a bit older. They represent an earlier generation. So most of their members are sort of in their 60s and 70s. Then there's different groups. There's sort of feminist organizations, which are very active. And to be honest, some of the most dynamic groups as well. There's organizations of journalists, lawyers, that sort of professional kind of layer of the working class or, you know, lower middle class. And then there's regional specific things, like in Sueda, there was a 14-month-long protest movement called the Hedar, which had emerged in, I think, August of 2023. And that is extremely dynamic and important in terms of shaping politics in that region, but also in Syria as a whole moving forward. Then there's the Kurdish left and organizing, which unfortunately I wasn't able to go there because of the appalling attacks on the region by Turkey and Turkish-backed militias. But I know for a fact that the people there are very well organized. There's the official SDF, but there's also left tendencies that are more oppositional and more radical. So there are these regionally specific dynamics, and then there's the left that's quite strong in Damascus. And probably other places too, which I didn't get to go to in the north. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your insightful comments. Clearly, Sortia will be a live site for, you know, organic organizing and struggle for years and years to come. And hopefully, you know, we can see more progressive movements coming out of this and gains for the left there and the people, most importantly. Before we let you go, are there any final comments that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to stress that the mainstream coverage of Syria is going to focus on the policies and decisions of HTS and so on. And that can be disheartening, and undeniably it is frustrating that after 14 long years of protest and revolution and civil war, that the people to take control of Syria are not the courageous freedom fighters of 2011 and those who, workers and peasants and the poor who sacrificed 10 years of their life to fight for a better country, but HTS. But I would just want to remind people and urge people to focus on the fact that the right to organize, the right to strike, to protest, to unionize, all these things are precious. And there is a vibrant, thriving Syrian left that is doing its best to organize and fight for a better society. Just as in America, it's easy to see Trump and be disheartened, and it is disheartening, that beneath the surface there's things going on. So we always have to stand on the side of workers, students, peasants, the poor, all across the world. And the Syrian people have given us an immense example of what can happen if you stand and you fight even against the most horrific odds.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Omar. And, yeah, I'll just also bring, listeners to the attention that if you, that to look up actually Omar's, Hassan's articles on Syria, they can be found on Red Flag, I think .org.au. That's great. Yes, redflag.org.au. And you can read, Omar's whole series on his eyewitness reports on Syria.
Yeah. Shukran, Omar. Thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
No, my pleasure.